Breakfast with Spanky, 7:30 to 9:30 on RDU 98.5 FM.
I'd like to welcome onto the show, first time we've actually had a catch up, Samantha Hayes, our eco-correspondent. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Nice to have you on the show. You don't mind me just all of a sudden calling you our eco-correspondent, do you?
Hey, go for it. Why not?
Throw you in the deep end. Now, firstly, I just wanted to ask, before we get into it, have you always been beautiful, or did you look a bit bung when you were a kid and then you surprised all the boys?
Look, my mother actually is responsible for a mullet that I had as a younger child. There are definitely some photos there from when I was at primary school.
She was probably trying to use it as a way to keep them away, you know what I mean? Give your beautiful daughter a mullet. She won't get pregnant too early.
Uh-oh.
Now, so you were over at the Copenhagen Climate Summit. What was that whole experience like? Was it an amazingly massive show?
Well, I can tell you, for a start, it was extremely cold. And there was one point, Spanky, where I thought that I was going to lose toes for TV3. I did actually believe I was standing outside in the cold. It took 4.5 hours one day to get inside the Bella Centre, which is where the conference was being held.
Wow.
And it was so cold outside that we were standing in snow, and it snowed every now and again as well, that I lost the feeling in my toes, and I did seriously consider whether I was ready to lose toes for TV3.
And what conclusion did you come to?
Well, that I wasn't, but that I had no choice in the matter. I couldn't sort of leave because I was crushed in the middle of a crowd. And so I just had to stay in this queue, this massive queue. So anyway, we got inside, warmed up, and I do still have all my toes, which was definitely a bonus. But look, the convention itself, the Climate Change Summit, was a huge beast of a thing. There were 47,000 people who had been accredited to turn up and be involved. The convention centre only held 15,000 people. And what happened was this line that I've just mentioned became a sort of metaphor for the conference itself. Obviously, not everybody could get inside, but everybody wanted to, and everybody wanted to have their say. And so they ended up having to bring in the army to deal with this queue that would form outside every day. The 47,000 people, they were made up of NGOs, people from non-governmental organisations, people from organisations like Greenpeace and Oxfam and those kind of places, and then media, of course, such as myself. There were 3,500 journalists that ended up being properly accredited with the appropriate passes, and we were allowed to come and go freely. Which was really good once we did have those passes. It did take a couple of days to get that, but then there were also IGOs and observers and all these kind of things, and so there were lots of people that wanted to be involved, but lots of people that couldn't get there, and every day they sort of cut back the numbers of people that they would allow inside, and these people became increasingly frustrated, and it was not so much talking about what they were going to do about climate change, but how they were going to talk about climate change that became what obsessed everybody, and this is what happened in the 2 weeks in Copenhagen. Everyone got hung up on the how, and no one got around to actually talking about it, and it was deemed by many of these organizations and individuals that were involved in many countries as well to be a massive failure.
So for you as someone on the ground, obviously you got to see some of the politics behind the politics, even, you know, because we just sort of hear that there's these different clusters and weird outcomes happen. What do you think tied the whole process up, or was it screwed from the beginning?
Well, form, really. Look, New Zealand actually attacked Tuvalu, the small island nation of Tuvalu, which was a really surprising move in the early stages of the second week. We're supposed to look after our Pacific Island nations, as you know, we think of it as our backyard or our front yard. And yet, here we had Nick Smith and Tim Grosser, our ministers, saying some pretty nasty things about Tuvalu. But what happened was Tuvalu spent a lot of time saying, look, we want to discuss these points. When are we going to discuss them? We won't let anything progress onwards until we've discussed these points, rather than letting the conference maybe move on and then come back. And so there was a lot of time tied up in that kind of bureaucracy rather than actually discussing climate change and how we're going to save the world. Because you've got to understand that 192 countries that went to Copenhagen, that sent representatives to Copenhagen, actually believe that climate change is a problem. There are only a couple of countries in the world that don't believe that climate change is actually a bad thing, and they are Saudi Arabia, and you can understand that their sort of oil interests might prevent them from seeing that. And another one apparently is the Czech Republic, and I'm not sure why they think that. But the rest of these countries actually firmly believe, including our own, that climate change is a huge problem and needs to be addressed. And so they all went along and they made speeches and said, look, we need to do something about this. We're ready to do something about this. We need to take action. But none of them actually took any action. It was quite remarkable to watch this United Nations beast in action. It's very ineffective.
And so what did come out, wasn't it? I can't remember. What was it called?
It was called the Copenhagen Accord.
Yeah, that's right. The Copenhagen Accord. And that
was the Copenhagen Accord. So what we knew heading into Copenhagen is that we weren't going to have a legally binding agreement, which is what was wanted from Copenhagen, because a bit of background. Copenhagen was supposed to take over from the Kyoto Protocol, which runs out in a couple of years' time. There's what's called the first commitment period. So that the Kyoto Protocol is a legally binding agreement, which will effectively not so much expire, because they are legally bound to continue to be a part of it, but we need to take the next step. And the countries needed to decide, how do we do that? Because America, which is the second largest emitter of greenhouse gases, is not part of the Kyoto Protocol, because China does not have to reduce their emissions under Kyoto, because they are deemed to be a developing country, and only developed countries have to reduce emissions. So China is not, America is not part of Kyoto in that respect. They did actually sign up, but they never ratified. So Kyoto needed something to push it forward. That was supposed to be Copenhagen. There was a 3-year process leading up to this conference in December, which was supposed to be enough to pull together a legally binding agreement for Copenhagen, but it was about sort of a year or 6 months out, they realised that this isn't going to happen, so everyone softened the blow and said, look, we're not going to get a legally binding agreement, we are going to get a political agreement. And this is where all this talk came about, you know, New Zealand, for example, said we're going to reduce our emissions by 10 to 20% of 1990 levels by 2020, and then more by 2050, and all these countries started coming out and saying what their targets were. What it came down to at Copenhagen is that they didn't even talk about targets. It was supposed to be all about targets, and no one even really talked about it except the European Union, which is actually very forward-thinking on this topic. But what happened on the last day, Spanky, is that Barack Obama swooped in with Air Force One. He arrived. There were 100, I think it was about 117 other world leaders also turned up, including John Key.
He didn't have to wait in line, did he, Obama?
No. The funny thing about Obama was that he actually has a dummy car. so we were sort of filming all these people coming in and watching them on the feeds, the video feeds, so we go, oh, here's India, India's arrived, great, yep. And then someone from a colourful African country would turn up. It was
Togo's here.
It was a little bit like, Star Wars, where they have the meeting and Natalie Portman's cheering it, it was a little bit like that. And then we said, oh yes, here comes Barack Obama, because there's a few choppers in the air and there's about 20 cars lined up, including his one, and then this bulletproof car pulls up and it's completely empty. So apparently they do run an entire fleet around the town as a complete dummy run.
That'd be a soul-destroying job, wouldn't it, driving the dummy car?
Yeah, you're in the dummy car, yeah. Apparently they bring Air Force One and another cargo plane wherever he goes around the world, and they have all his own vehicles and things, so it's quite a show. But anyway, Barack Obama turned up. What he did was he pulled aside a few countries, including China and India. Brazil was one of them, and South Africa turned out to be quite a big player in this as well. And he says, right, we need to start from scratch and we're going to make up our own agreement. Now, this is a really interesting day for me, because it started out really, really, really positively, because everyone in the media hall thought, great, yes, Barack Obama's come to save the day. But we also sort of knew from his speech at the very beginning of the day, we expected, and as you know, Barack Obama's known for his rousing speeches. He gets up and he tells everyone, we can do this, yes we can, come on, let's go. When he got up and spoke in the morning at Copenhagen, he sounded exasperated, he sounded irritated, he sounded annoyed. And he said, we're going to be having the same old talks about climate change year after year, perhaps decade after decade. And we should have probably realised at that point that things may not have been about to go too well, but I think we're all a little bit enthusiastic about what he might have been able to accomplish. What came out of Copenhagen was a very watered-down, weak agreement. I spoke to somebody from the European Commission who was almost in tears and said it wasn't worth the paper it was written on. They would have been better off not doing anything. And then it went against 2 years of mantra that they had built up to, that the United Nations had built up to. Things like these targets I was telling you about. So the science has said, and this is the figures that have been bandied around for a couple of years now, is that the world needs to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 25 to 40% by 2020 if we are going to have a 50% chance of limiting global warming at 2 degrees by the end of the century. And even at 2 degrees, millions of people are going to be displaced and lose their homes and have no access to water. So that's a compromise that politicians have come up with, not the science. Politicians have said, we're happy with 2 degrees. Some have. Others, like the Association of Small Island States, have said 2 degrees means we're underwater. That's why Tuvalu, for example, is unhappy, and the Maldives. But these things like the targets of emissions reductions are not even included in any kind of meaningful way. They're like a byline that's written in there in a very weak way, saying, hey, well, we might reduce our emissions, but we're not legally bound to, and we're not saying that we will or not, but we might.
So it sounds like Copenhagen didn't really produce anything, and everyone, that's nothing new, but that the question will be, I guess, where to from here? It sounds like we need to lock them in a room for a year until they come out with something, rather than 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that's right. I personally think, Spanky, that the League of Nations, which was the United Nations precursor, fell apart because it failed to prevent World War II, and I wonder what will happen to the United Nations, because it appears that it has failed to prevent catastrophic climate change. That is if the science is correct, and we will see if the science is correct.
Hey, Sam, it's been great talking, and we'll catch up with you some other time about
Lovely.
Some other things, and thank you for your time.
Have a good day, okay. Down in Christchurch.
Catch up. Right, that is Samantha Hayes there, eco-correspondent for TV3, giving us her debrief on her experience of Copenhagen. Very interesting to get inside the view of someone who was actually there. Time to wrap up.
This has been a Breakfast with Spanky podcast, thanks to RDU 98.5 FM. To find out more, go to rdu.org.nz.